ain't heard about Moto Casino? Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto. I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Spring Sale and get 35% off paints and stains March 13th through the 23rd. Whether you're refreshing your interior or exterior, we've got the colors to bring your vision to life. And with delivery, getting everything to your door is easier than ever. Shop online to have it delivered or visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details. Delivery available on qualifying orders.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
This is The Big Breakdown, a long look back at some of the biggest stories we're covering for you at the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Corey Richens' defense team wants you to believe that publicity has poisoned her murder trial. That's the word they used. Poisoned. And in a case where a woman is accused of lacing her husband's cocktail with five times a lethal dose of fentanyl, you'd think someone on that legal team would have picked a different verb. But here we are. This last month, defense attorneys filed their second motion to move Corey's trial out of Summit County, Utah. They argued that the case has become so well-known locally that seating an impartial jury is essentially impossible. And look, the numbers they cite aren't nothing. Out of 1,723 jury questionnaires returned, roughly 85% of respondents said they recognized the case. About 60% said they've been following it somewhat closely or very closely. The defense did the math, or their version of the math, and said once you strip out everyone who's familiar with the case, everyone with hardship claims, everyone with other disqualifying issues, you're left with about 72 viable jurors. That's not enough, they argued, to reliably seat a jury of 8 plus 4 alternatives. I'm sorry, but 8 plus 4 does not equal 72. They even flagged a specific piece of evidence by name, the walk the dog letter, warning the judge that if it comes up during jury selection, even more prospective jurors might suddenly realize they know the case, shrinking the pool even further. That's how famous this case has gotten, they said. They can't even mention the evidence without tainting the room, according to them. Here's what the Fox News reporting on February 7th didn't mention. Judge Richard Marzik had already ruled on this. He denied the motion on February 2nd. 5 days before that article hit, there was a second time the defense asked for a venue change. The first was denied back in April of 25. They appealed it all the way to the Utah Supreme Court, which declined to hear it last June. And now, with jury selection literally starting, they tried again and got the same answer. Hey. Persistence sometimes pays off, right? Right? Why? Because the prosecution painted a very different picture from the same questionnaire data. Prosecutors told the judge that 830 potential jurors, nearly half of all recipients, said that either they had not heard the case or had not followed it at all. That's a workable pool. The judge agreed. He didn't appear to have any doubts about whether a fair and impartial jury could be seated in Summit County. So the venue argument is dead, but the question underneath it is worth sitting with for a minute because it reveals something the defense doesn't necessarily want to talk about. Why is this case so well known? Is it because the public has an insatiable
thirst for learning about Corey Richens because she's just so neat of a gal. Because we just can't get enough. Or is it because she's done enough crazy shit that enough eyeballs go over and go, what? She did what? She's doing what? Huh? That might be some of it. Maybe, you know, the actions of your defendant that might, you know, cause and effect, do something that the public may look at as crazy or extreme or outright lies. Allegedly. And the public reacts. Maybe there's a cause and effect here. I don't know. Call me crazy. Give me your thoughts in the comment section as we work through this. Substack or YouTube is where you can do that. The links are in the descriptions. The defense wants to pin this whole thing on media saturation, on public fascination gone too far, on a system that failed to protect their client from the court of public opinion. Yeah, because that's the thing. There's some sort of court that's going to somehow protect you from the court of public opinion. But if you trace the notoriety back to its source, every single thread leads to the same place. The alleged actions of Corey Richens herself. I'm not here to say she's innocent or guilty, but I'm saying the reason there's attention on you is because you invited attention on you. Yes, Corey, you did. And that started with writing a children's book. It's a lot of ways of helping your children deal with the loss of their father, other than writing a public children's book about it. You want to do it for your kids privately? Go for it. You want to get attention on your case? Write a children's book and publish it. After Eric Richens died in March of 2022, Corey wrote and published Are You With Me? A picture book about helping children cope with grief. She was a grieving mother turned author, channeling tragedy into something beautiful. At least that's the story, until it wasn't. When she was arrested in May of 23, charged with poisoning the husband she'd written the grief book about, that contrast became the defining image of the case. No journalist manufactured the irony. No media outlet invented the narrative. Corey published the book. She did press around it. She built a public identity around a death that prosecutors now say she caused. The notoriety the defense complains about, she laid the foundation for it herself. Then there's the letter, the walk the dog letter. That's the defense, or what the defense now cites as so well known it could compromise jury selection. Let's talk about where that letter came from. It was found during a search of Corey's jail cell. 6 handwritten pages addressed to her mother. Across the top of the first page, she allegedly wrote, walk the dog. But take vague notes so you remember. The contents, according to prosecutors, are instructions for Corey's brother to fabricate testimony connecting Eric to drug purchases in Mexico. The letter allegedly lays out what prosecutors described as a fabricated narrative that Eric was secretly buying pain pills and fentanyl through ranch workers, that he hid drugs in Corey's bags at airports, that his death was just an accidental overdose nobody wanted to acknowledge. The connection has to be made with Mexico and drugs, the letter reportedly says. Reword this however he needs to make the point. When confronted, Corey reportedly told her mother in a recorded jailhouse call that the letter was part of a novel she was writing. A novel! We went from children's book author to now novelist. From jail. About her own murder case. The defense tried to get it excluded. The judge allowed it. They tried to argue the cell search was illegal because the letter was in an envelope labeled attorney privilege. And that didn't work either. And now in their own venue, change motion, the defense names this letter as a key driver of public awareness. Think about what that means. The document that prosecutors say proves witness tampering, a document Corey allegedly wrote in her own hand
from her own jail cell, is now being used by her own attorneys to argue the case is too famous for a trial. She allegedly created the single most notorious piece of evidence in the case, and the defense is treating it like a weather event that happened to her. Well, it was in this envelope that said attorney privilege. Well, clearly this wasn't an attorney privileged communication. You can put it in that envelope. It doesn't mean it is. By that reasoning, Corey, you could put a bunch of drugs in that envelope and nobody should find it because of what you labeled it. That's not how that works. They went in and there was things in that envelope that were attorney-client privilege, and they let that be. This was not part of it, nor would anything else you put in an envelope that you label attorney-client privilege. Just because the envelope says it doesn't mean it is what it is. Just like this case. Just because you say it's this doesn't mean it's necessarily that. It's really an interesting conundrum going on here. And a tell as well. Well, if I say it's this, if I put everything into this envelope that I label it being this, well, then anything in there, everyone has to respect as that, right? That's your reasoning, Corey? That's your reasoning? Yeah, that's the same reason you're behind bars right now. Later on, the financial allegations, prosecutors say Corey purchased multiple life insurance policies on Eric, totaling nearly $2 million. They allege she changed the beneficiary to herself without his knowledge. When Eric found out, he reportedly switched it back to his business partner. Investigators say Corey wanted to use the insurance payout to finish and flip a $2 million mansion, an investment Eric's family says he never approved of. And guess where the money comes from? It's him. Well, it's what she really wanted. Well, guess what? If it's not your money to spend or invest, then it ain't your fucking choice. On top of the murder charges, she's facing insurance fraud, forgery, and distribution of a controlled substance. And in June of 25, the Summit County Attorney's Office filed an entirely separate case against her for mortgage fraud and additional forgery dating back to 2021. She's a gem. None of this came from the reporter's imagination. It came from charging documents, court filings, and financial records. Allegations that Richens, of course, denies. The case is famous because the alleged facts are extraordinary, and Corey Richens is at the center of every single one of them. But here's where it gets really interesting, because while the defense was fighting about jury pools and venue changes, something much bigger was happening underneath. Robert Krauser, he's the man prosecutors say supplied fentanyl to Corey's housekeeper, Carmen Lauber, who allegedly delivered it to Corey. That chain, Krauser to Lauber to Richens, is the prosecution's pathway for putting the murder weapon in the defendant's hands. And in October 25, that chain took a serious hit. Krauser signed a sworn affidavit saying he never sold fentanyl to Lauber. He said he sold her Oxy, 30 milligram tablets, on two occasions in early 2022. He told the defense that when he first spoke to detectives back in May of 23, he was in jail, detoxing from drug use and out of it. He says he doesn't remember telling them it was fentanyl, but now he knows exactly what it was, right? Yeah, that's how that works. When the Summit County Attorney's Office re-interviewed him in April of 25, he told them the same thing. No fentanyl, only Oxy. The defense says prosecutors never disclosed an April interview. They say they only found out when they interviewed Krauser themselves in September of 25. The defense called it rot at the core, poisoning the whole harvest of justice. Prosecutors pushed back hard. They said Krauser is incredible, that he was a low-level street dealer selling blues at a time when virtually every pill on the street contained fentanyl. And that the rest of the evidence, motive, opportunity, toxicology, showing five times the lethal dose, still holds. Richens has pled not guilty to all charges and maintained she did not kill her husband. She is presumed innocent until proven guilty. That said, there are fights the defense will still have to win in front of a jury. And the challenges don't stop at Crozer. Weeks before jury selection, a witness reached out to the defense and said she was being harassed by lead detective Jeff O'Driscoll after she declined to be prepped for testimony. She asked for questions in writing. O'Driscoll's response, according to text messages filed in court, "You have received a subpoena to appear at the court as a witness. If you fail to do so, a judge will issue a warrant for your arrest. You will then have to sit in a holding cell until you are needed to testify. So make your life easier and answer our calls so we can prep you on what you will be asked. Otherwise, the next time I knock on your door, I will have a warrant and a catch pole for your dog." He's not mincing words, and yes, that might be a bit much. When you're trying to handle this case responsibly, you can't just say anything you want. Crossing T's, dotting I's, using the right pen, I think, is important in this analogy. Because that ain't crossing your T's or dotting your I's. That's using the wrong pen. That's not how you handle a witness. He also allegedly told her to show up at court every single day of trial without giving her a specific date for her testimony. Again, pretty bullshitty. If you want to get the woman on the charges that you have, which are pretty strong, don't screw it up in the lead up to the trial. Don't give them ammo they don't need. Just like she gave you plenty of ammo that she didn't even have to fire. But she did, because she's not bright. And judging by it, the prosecution in this case ain't very bright either. A second witness with immunity said investigator Travis Hopper warned that cooperation was conditional, that previously granted immunity could be pulled if the witness didn't agree to meet in person again with the prosecution team. This witness had already given a full statement 2 years earlier and says they were told at the time they'd done nothing wrong. The defense calls all of it blatant witness intimidation. Prosecutors say O'Driscoll's conduct was proper and have responded to the motion privately through the court. Again, just because you put it in the envelope that says proper doesn't mean to the rest of the room when you pour out the contents of that envelope that everybody thinks it is. Seems to be what's going on here in this trial. People who like to label their actions certain things, and then the rest of us looking at it going, yeah, everything in that envelope is not what you say it is. And when both sides are doing it, yeah. Welcome to reasonable doubt territory. Even when there's damning evidence. So my message to the prosecution, stop being idiots. Stop stepping on your own toes. Stop shooting yourself in the foot. Jesus Christ, this is not a hard one. Pull your emotions down, put on your big boy or big girl pants, and act like a fucking adult. Don't threaten people to take their dogs. Your witnesses, you fucking idiots. You got a strong enough case here. Someone who deserves justice, the dead husband. Don't destroy it because you want to sound like a big boy or a big girl or intimidating to this or that. Just do your job. Just follow the letter of the law. Let the narcissist sink their own ship. They don't need you threatening to take someone's dog for you to get there. Meanwhile, there's a timeline. Judge Marzik has set a firm end date of March 27th. The defense says that's fantasy. They point to over 1,000 exhibits, more than 10 expert witnesses, over 100 additional witnesses, and at least one financial expert whose testimony alone could take 3 days. Defense attorney Kathy Nestor told the judge flat out, "I don't see a scenario in the world where this case will end on March 27th. So here's where we actually are. Jury selection is starting. As of you hearing this, February 10th. The trial itself set for February 23rd. Summit County has poured over $1 million into this case across 2 years. Corey Richens has been sitting in the Summit County Jail since May 23, nearly 3 years without a trial. The defense wants the story to be about a woman who can't get a fair shake because the media made her too famous. But the judge has looked at that argument twice now and said, no, both times. The prosecution says the jury pool is workable, and the reason the people of Summit County know the case has nothing to do with media bias or sensationalism. It has everything to do with a children's book author who allegedly poisoned her husband with a lethal dose of fentanyl, allegedly tried to orchestrate false testimony from her jail cell, allegedly committed insurance fraud to profit from his death, and then turned herself into a public figure by publishing a grief book while the investigation was still active. The defense has publicly, or that the defense has publicity poisoned this trial. But even if a fraction of these allegations hold up, the only person who poisoned anything in this case is the defendant herself. And the trial hasn't even started yet. Give me your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. Or on our Substack. The links are in the description. I'd love to get your feedback on where you think this thing is going. We're going to be covering the trial for you from start to finish. So buckle up. Press subscribe wherever you're listening to podcasts so you don't miss any of our coverage of this case as well. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Search that wherever you get podcasts. That's where you'll find us. Love to get your feedback and your thoughts on this case. We'll continue the conversation there in the comments. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast. This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Just a few days ago, depending on when you're watching this, I mean, if you're watching this 5 years after we recorded, but just a few days ago from this recording, the Department of Homeland Security issued an intelligence bulletin to law enforcement agencies across the country warning them, again, this is from DHS, warning them that domestic partners are, and I'm quoting directly here, increasingly likely to use chemical and biological toxins to kill or harm their partners. They felt it appropriate enough, imminent enough, dangerous enough to make a statement like this. I mean, it wasn't about Al-Qaeda. It wasn't about some foreign act. It was about domestic partners. They only do that sort of thing if they're seeing a big uptick. So I guess they're seeing a big uptick in domestic partners trying to poison each other. And it's not just because they're getting caught, it's because they're getting away with it. Corey Richens' trial is about to get underway here, and that is at the center of that case. And we're going to get into a little bit of that, but a little bit of this too, because this is something that you may want to pay attention to. Maybe. I don't know. Depending on what's going on in your world, maybe not directly with your partner, but I don't know. I mean, if you think deep, depending on how big your friend circle is, I mean, I'm the wheels are turning in my mind as I'm doing this piece with you of like, is there anybody in my world? I have no fear of this with my partner, with anything that's going on in my life right now. But I'm wondering about my circle of friends. Like, is anybody in a situation where like this? I don't know. It's something to think about, though. This wasn't some academic study buried in a journal nobody reads. This was DHS telling cops to pay attention because people are poisoning the people they sleep next to. And the trend is accelerating. According to NBC News, reporting on the bulletin, it listed 17 documented cases since 2014. At least 11 of those victims are dead. Again, it's not because the numbers are high on who's getting caught. It's because there's likely a lot that are not getting caught. And it's hard to quantify that statistically. But if you look at a lot of deaths and you look at going, this is a little, you know, how many cases do we cover here where they have to go back and exhume the body after how long because it was ruled natural causes? And then, oh, surprise, surprise. Yeah. The common poisons that are being used, cyanide, ricin, antifreeze, fentanyl, eye drop, stuff you can buy at the gas station, order on Amazon, or cook up from instructions you found on your phone at 2 a.m. And according to DHS, these substances are often sourced from online black markets or made at home or, you know, just picked up at Walgreens. That's the world we're living in right now. Good morning, America. But here's an interesting, I mean, 17 cases. Those are the ones we know about. Those are the ones where somebody got caught, where somebody got suspicious, where the right test got run at the right time. The DHS bulletin itself acknowledges the problem. These toxins are specifically chosen because they mimic natural illness. The symptoms look like flu, look like heart attack, look like food poisoning, and by the time anyone thinks to ask questions, the evidence is fading and the killer is standing at the funeral looking devastated. And if the chemicals have worn out of the body, which some of these do, and if no toxicology test was done in time, no one's the wiser, and you can't prove anything else happened. So the real question isn't how often this happens. The real question is how often it happens and nobody ever finds out. Poisoning has always been called the coward's weapon. Call it whatever you want. It's a calculated one. It's a weapon of someone who doesn't want to mess, doesn't want to struggle, doesn't want to be in the room when it happens, or better yet, wants to be in the room, playing the role of the concerned spouse, rushing their partner to the hospital as the hero. The DHS bulletin put it plainly, these substances are often chosen for their ability to mimic natural illnesses, complicating detection and investigation. As government speak for saying the killer's biggest advantage isn't the poison, it's the fact that when someone gets sick and dies, the default assumption is they got sick and died. Nobody's first thought is murder. And that delay, that assumption of innocence in the clinical sense, is what gives poisoners their window. So call them cowards all you want. I'll call them strategic monsters, because that's really what it is. Calling someone a coward is only going to make the victims try and feel good. It's a placation. And placating someone never really has any sort of positive effect other than that exact moment. Oh, okay, I feel good in this moment. And then what? Let's talk about the ones that get caught, because even in those cases, the ones that ended in convictions and life sentences, the system almost missed every single one of them. James Craig, Colorado dentist, married 23 years, 6 children. In February 23, Craig attended a dental conference in Las Vegas, met a woman, started an affair, and apparently decided that divorce was too inconvenient. Within days, he was back at his dental practice searching the internet for how to make murder look like a heart attack. And is there such a thing as an undetectable poison? And how long does it take to die from arsenic poisoning? Ladies, men, if your spouse goes away to a conference for business and comes back and suddenly is acting a little distant, I'd be checking the Google history. And if these are the things that are popping up, run. So what did he do? Because who knew you could? I didn't until this story. He ordered potassium cyanide on Amazon and had it delivered to his office. Subscribe and save. I don't know that he subscribed and saved. That would be a kind of an odd one. Like that might be, you might have a serial killer on your hands, Amazon, if somebody is subscribing and saving to potassium cyanide on a monthly basis. I don't know. I'm sure there are scientific uses for it that aren't serial killers. But I'd be looking. Because after he got the potassium cyanide, he allegedly started making his wife Angela protein shakes. And you can guess what the secret ingredient was. Because over the course of 10 days in March of 23, Angela Craig was hospitalized 3 times. Doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong with her. She had dizziness, vomiting, fainting. Her kids found her passed out on the floor at one point. And another time, she literally crawled across the room because she couldn't stand up. She texted her husband from the hospital bed and said, "I feel drugged." His response, given our history, "I know that must be triggering. Just for the record, I didn't drug you." He absolutely drugged her. Prosecutors say he laced her protein shakes with arsenic, gave her prescription capsules he'd emptied and refilled with cyanide. And when she was hospitalized for the final time, he walked into her room with a syringe and injected a fatal dose of cyanide through her IV. Then he walked out and texted his mistress. Angela was declared brain dead on March 18, 23. She was 43 years old. Craig was convicted in July of 25 of first-degree murder, life without parole. He also tried to get a fellow inmate to kill the lead detective investigating his wife's death and attempted to get his own daughter to create a deepfake video, making it look like Angela had been suicidal. And just for good measure, because I don't know why, and I'm just going to throw it in there because it's part of the story, kind of, or a trend. And he's Mormon. I know. The judge compared him to a tornado. But here's the thing that matters for this conversation. If Craig had been even slightly less stupid, if he hadn't searched for undetectable poisons on his office computer, if he hadn't ordered cyanide through his Amazon account, Angela Craig's death might have been one more medical mystery. The doctors treating her couldn't figure out what was wrong while she was alive. The system didn't catch him. His own digital trail caught him. Then there's Lana Clayton, South Carolina, 2018, poured an entire bottle of Visine, the eye drops, the ones you use to get the red out, into her husband Steve's water. Now, I didn't know this shit was poison, but it's poison. Did you? I always thought it was just like kind of some sort of a solution that was harmless. No, you can kill people with eye drops. I don't know if that's good to know or bad to know. I'm not going to be poisoning anyone with eye drops, but I guess you should be concerned if suddenly the Visine is nearly empty and your smoothie tastes a little odd. Steve Clayton died, and the coroner's initial assessment was possible heart attack. That was almost the end of the story, except Steve's nephew happened to be a police officer, and he noticed something was off about Lana's behavior. She didn't mention trying to revive him. Steve's phone was missing. The family pushed for an autopsy and a full toxicology panel. When the results came back, the coroner found tetrahydrolene in Steve's blood. Tetrahydrolizine? What is that? That's the active ingredient in Visine. And later, said she'd never even heard of it as the cause of death. She had to look it up.
If Steve Clayton's nephew hadn't been a cop, if the family hadn't insisted on the autopsy, Lana Clayton walks away clean, heart attack, case closed, condolences to the widow. Here's the new bottle of Visine. It gets the red out. You might need that as you're crying over your dead husband that you, I guess, murdered when you got the red out. Stacey Castor in New York killed two husbands with antifreeze and got away with the first one for 5 years. Her first husband died in 2000 and nobody looked twice. It was a situation where he was rushed to the hospital. It was ruled an apparent natural death. She killed her second husband in 2005. And even then, she almost got away with it. She only got caught because after husband number two died, she tried to poison her own daughter with crushed pills in vodka and staged it as a suicide, pinning both husbands' death on the girl. The daughter survived, barely. If Ashley Castor had died that night, her mother probably would have walked free, and two murders go into the ground as natural causes and a suicide. Every single one of these cases has the same through line. The system didn't catch a killer. A person did. A nephew who happened to be a cop, a daughter who happened to survive, a digital forensics trail that happened to exist because the killer was careless. Take any one of those lucky breaks out of the equation, and these are unsolved cases, or worse, they are not cases at all. They are death certificates that say heart attack or overdose or natural causes filed away and never questioned. And that brings us to the part of the story that should genuinely unsettle you. In 1972, about 19% of deaths in the United States received an autopsy. 19%. Does that seem like a low number to you? Well, it's gotten worse. Because by 2007, it's 8.5% for deaths attributed to disease, meaning deaths that appeared natural. Appeared being the operative word. The autopsy rate dropped to 4.3%. Let that land for a second. 91% of deaths in this country are attributed to disease, and fewer than 5% of those get a postmortem examination to confirm that's actually what happened. We pretty much go with people's guts. Well, it looks like this on the surface, Joe. It must be that. All right. A Department of Justice-affiliated research group called this rate miserably low. There are only 37 accredited forensic pathology training programs in 27 states. Large parts of rural America don't have access to a forensic pathologist at all. In some communities, if you die at home and nobody raises a flag, that's it, you're gone, and no one is checking. Now layer this on top of published research, including a major meta-analysis, has found that approximately one-third of death certificates are likely incorrect. Half of all autopsies reveal findings that were completely unsuspected before the person died. One study had experienced forensic examiners review cases they believed were appropriate for certification without autopsy, standard practice, the kind of thing that happens every day. And when they compared their presumed cause of death to the actual autopsy results, they were completely wrong 28% of the time. And in 3% of those cases, the actual manner of death was non-natural. Someone killed them. 3% sounds small until you remember that nearly 3 million people die in the United States every year. And if we're only autopsying a fraction of disease-related deaths, and we know the presumed causes is wrong almost a third of the time, and some percentage of those are actually homicides that were never identified, we're not looking at a gap in the system. We're looking at a black hole. We have no idea what's in it, and by design, we almost never look. Which brings us to now. Corey Richens goes on trial February 23rd, 2026. Jury selection starts February 10th in Park City, Utah. She's charged with aggravated murder and the death of her husband, Eric, who was found dead in their bedroom on March 4th of 2022. An autopsy determined he died from fentanyl intoxication, 5 times the lethal dose in his blood, and it was illicit fentanyl, not prescription. Prosecutors allege she spiked his cocktail and that she'd made a failed attempt 2 weeks earlier on Valentine's Day with a fentanyl-laced sandwich.
The alleged motive is financial. Her realty company reportedly owed lenders at least $1.8 million, and Eric's estate was worth about $5 million. She's pled not guilty to all charges. She's presumed innocent until proven otherwise in a court of law. But the detail that connects her case to everything we've been talking about is this. Eric Richens died at home. His death was initially treated as an overdose. If his family hadn't pushed, the investigators hadn't dug deeper, if the toxicology hadn't come back showing illicit fentanyl at a concentration that doesn't happen by accident, this could have been closed out. And in the weeks after his death, Corey Richens wrote a children's book about grieving and went on morning television to promote it. The DHS bulletin issued a few days ago specifically references her upcoming trial as part of this growing national problem. So here's where we land. We only know about the poisoners who get caught. We only catch the ones where a family member got suspicious, where a cop nephew noticed something wrong, where a daughter survived, where a Google search history was too damning to ignore. In a country where fewer than 1 in 10 deaths get an autopsy, where death certificates are wrong a third of the time, where the substances being used are specifically chosen to look like natural illnesses, and where the federal government is now formally warning law enforcement that this is getting kind of bad. The honest answer to how common is spousal poisoning is that we genuinely don't know. And the reason we don't know is that we've built a death investigation system that can barely tell us how people actually die, let alone whether someone killed them. The DHS bulletin says if the trend continues, we'll need more specialized training for first responders and better forensic tools. And sure, that's true, but the deeper problem isn't training. The deeper problem is that in America, dying looks exactly the same whether someone poisoned you or your heart just gave out. And almost nobody checks. Your thoughts in the comment section on YouTube or on our Substack. Be sure to check out our Substack right now. It's free to join, absolutely no paywall up. You get access to all of our videos a day before we put them out publicly on YouTube or on the podcast platform. So do check that out, hiddenkillers.substack.com, the link in the description, or you can comment on YouTube. Again, link in the description. Take us with you on the go. If you're watching us on YouTube, great, thank you. Hey, you can listen to us in the car as well, when you're taking the kids to school, when you're going and doing your errands, whatever, on your commute, whatever it may be. Search for us, Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi, wherever you get podcasts. Press subscribe and be sure to have us with you wherever you go on whatever platform you like to consume your content on. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, iHeart, whatever it may be. Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Search and press subscribe. Until next time, my name is Tony Bruschi, and we'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now, and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Don't miss Scarpetta, a propulsive new crime thriller starring Academy Award winner Nicole Kidman, Academy Award winner Jamie Lee Curtis, Emmy winner Bobby Cannavale, with Emmy nominee Simon Baker and Academy Award winner Ariana DeBose. Scarpetta follows Dr. K. Scarpetta, Nicole Kidman, a brilliant and no-nonsense chief medical examiner, as she investigates a haunting murder that strangely parallels her first major case from decades earlier. Is the case that made her the case that breaks her? Based on the best-selling crime novels by Patricia Cornwell, Scarpetta is both a crime thriller and messy family drama that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Get ready to hunt a serial killer in the satisfying series with terrifying twists and an ending you won't see coming. Watch all episodes of Scarpetta now, only on Prime Video.
Moto Casino.
America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's Social Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free to play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.